For years I played Sherrith's invocation recording every morning at 6:30. Dim lights, incense, the altar, the whole atmosphere. Students walked into it completely cold. No context, no opt-out. Some loved it. Most had no idea what was happening, and a few of them never came back. I'm Michael Joel Hall, and this is Ashtanga Tech. I want to be fair to the traditional setup, because it does carry real risks, and I ignored all of them. To a newcomer, it can read as cultish. It sets off pointless pronunciation wars between lineage camps, whose Sanskrit is more correct. It demands resources, the time, the materials, the whole curated atmosphere, and it can wrap patriarchal authority structures in sacred packaging, so the power dynamic hides inside something that feels holy. Those are real problems. So at one point, I did the obvious thing. I removed it entirely, and that left a hole nobody warned me about. Let me walk through what didn't work, because I tried both extremes before I found the middle. The first thing that didn't work was the full traditional version. Teacher-led, teacher-owned, teacher-performed puja before Mysore practice, and the students were audience members in someone else's ritual. That's the part I missed at the time. They weren't participating, they were watching me. And because different teachers pronounced things differently, it spawned this stupid little competition nobody asked for. Whose Sanskrit is more correct? The answer, by the way, is nobody's and everybody's. Move on. Then I swung the other way. When I started questioning the patriarchal structures in the practice, I threw invocation out along with everything else. Clean slate. Very progressive. It felt righteous for about 3 weeks, and then I missed it. I missed the incense. I missed the intentional beginning, the pause before the work starts. And the students who genuinely connected with it missed it too. Turns out ritual has value that's independent of the power structures that co-opted it. I'd thrown out the thing because of what had latched onto the thing. So here's the actual lesson, and it took me the long way to get to it. The problem was never invocation itself. The problem was three specific things: mandatory participation, centralized authority, and zero explanation. Throw out the deployment method. Keep the ritual. Let me tell you what it looks like now, because the redesign is the whole point. First, I do my own puja before our students arrive. Incense, invocation, intention, private, mine. It sets my teaching day, and it requires exactly no one else to participate in my personal practice. That's the integrity piece. I keep my own tradition without imposing it on anybody. Second, for the group, I read the room. Some mornings the energy in the space supports an invocation. Some mornings it plainly doesn't. And when it does, I ask a student to lead it, not me, them. That single change does an enormous amount of structural work, and I'll come back to it. Third, Friday-led primary always includes the invocation, always. So the students who attend led know exactly what the format is. It's a predictable container, no surprises, no cold ambush. And fourth, there's a standing rule, and it's 5 words that solved a decade of problems. Invocation at 6:25. Practice starts at 6:30. Arrive when it works for you. That's it. If the chant matters to you, you come at 25. If it doesn't, you come at 30, and you've missed nothing you were required to be there for. Now let me come back to why handing the chant to a student matters so much, because this is the real engine of the thing. When multiple people led the invocation, when the teacher steps back out of the center of it, when different pronunciations coexist in the same room without anybody correcting anybody, the invocation stops being a mechanism of authority. It becomes community property. Nobody owns it, and something that nobody owns can't be used as a lever over anybody. And here's what optional actually buys you, for both kinds of people at once. The students who don't connect with Hindu ritual, who have genuine religious objections, or who just find group chanting uncomfortable, they practice without it, and there's no second-class status attached. And the students who value the ritual still get it, either through Friday-led, which is predictable, or through a spontaneous invitation, which is organic. Both groups get what they need. Nobody gets excluded to serve the other. That's the design goal. There's a principle underneath this that I call the Brussels sprouts axiom, and it's worth naming plainly. The students who eventually come to love the invocation get there because they watched it happen casually, led by their peers, with zero pressure on them. Force it on someone on day one, and you kill the exact curiosity that would have grown on its own. You cannot mandate someone into loving something. You can only make it available and let it become interesting. Let me answer the three questions I get every time I describe this. What if no students want to lead the chant on a given day? Then you skip it. And here's the counterintuitive part. The willingness to skip it is precisely what makes it meaningful when it does happen. A ritual that has to occur no matter what, regardless of the conditions in the room, isn't a practice anymore. It's a performance. Should you correct a student's Sanskrit pronunciation? No. Multiple pronunciations living side by side is a feature, not a bug. The moment you start correcting pronunciation, you've reinstated the exact authority hierarchy you were trying to take apart. If a student comes to you and asks for help, help them. Otherwise, let it be. And how do you explain the invocation to a brand new student? Keep it plain and short. Some of us chant an invocation before a practice. It's a traditional opening. You're welcome to join, listen, or skip it entirely. That's the whole thing. No sales pitch. No heavy spiritual framing. Let them find their own relationship to it in their own time. Two quick scenes to make it concrete. First, a first-time student walks in at 6:25 on a Friday, and the room is mid-invocation. She freezes in the doorway, clearly uncomfortable, not sure whether she's intruding. What do? You wave her in, casually. And afterward, you mention that Friday lead includes an opening chant, that it's optional, and that she can arrive at 6:30 next time if she'd rather skip it. No apology, no hard sell. The casualness is the message. The casualness is doing all the work. Second, a long-time student tells a newer one that they're saying the invocation wrong and offers to teach them the real version. What do? You step in, gently but clearly. There are several valid pronunciations from different lineages. There's no single correct version. Because this is a structural moment, even though it looks small, if you let one student claim authority over the sacred knowledge, you have just rebuilt, brick by brick, the exact hierarchy you spent all this effort dismantling. So here's the leverage point, and it's the whole episode in one line. Separate your personal practice from collective imposition. Your private ritual keeps your own integrity intact. The collective ritual offered, but never required, stays alive without ever becoming coercive. You can honor the tradition. You can practice the ritual. You can create genuinely sacred space. And you can do all of it without guru worship, without coercion, without replicating the power structures you happen to inherit but never examined. It just takes conscious redesign, instead of either a blind repetition or blanket rejection. If you've been caught between those two, clinging to the ritual as handed down, or throwing it all out and missing what was actually good in it, and you want to find your own honest relationship to the tradition, text the word agentic to 202-816-5612, and you'll reach a real coach, a person, not a bot. We'll sort out what's worth keeping and what was just power in a costume.